views and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
Would have had serious consequences for the world financial system, but may also have empowered the people of Africa, something black activists say the US wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing cake. We're slicing cake. We're slicing cake.
Say the US wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing cake.
Say the US wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing.
Gaddafi didn't give up. In the months leading up to the military intervention, he called on African and Muslim nations to join together to create this new currency that would rival the dollar and euro. They would sell oil and other resources around the world only for gold dinars. It's an idea that would shift the economic balance of the world. Countries' wealth would depend on how much gold they have, not how many dollars they trade. And Libya has 144 tons of gold.
Good morning and welcome to Tando Radio Show for this Wednesday afternoon. Today's date is January the 16th, 2019. It is a Wise Wednesday, and we do have Team Davis sitting in the queue who will be joining us here in just a bit. This is Scotty, your station manager. Before I get into what's up on tap for today, please continue to support the Black Talk Media Project. It's the nonprofit that has managed and, well, created and managed the Black Talk Radio Network and now BTR community. It has been around for over 10 years. We're going into our 11th year in existence. We have been able to provide the listening audience with radio programs, podcasts, articles, just all sorts of information without any kind of corporate support. No grants from the U.S. government, although we did get one grant to promote the U.S. Census back in 2010. But pretty much we're listener supported. So please, if you want to see us continue with our efforts in bringing you independent media, please make a donation. You can also join BTR community. That will help, just $24 a year. Because we've never really had a real budget to work with, and we could do so much more if we had a real budget. But, you know, we've been maintaining and doing what we can with what we have, which is the case for a lot of people who look like us. So, but please, if you want to see us continue for another 10 years, you can make a donation or join btrcommunity.com, and that will help that. Now, I do see we got Pastor Keith on the line. He's Dave's co-host. Dave is still off right now taking care of some business, and I wasn't sure if there was going to be any news stories to share. So, Keith, are you there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes. Good morning to you. Did you have any news stories or anything that you wanted to share before we got into Wise Wednesdays with Team Davis?
No, sir. I think that we were all just sitting around waiting for Brother Davis to impart that knowledge that he always does.
Okay. Well, we always want to do our news segment before we go to them. That's just how we always do it. So I do have some articles that I've been posting in the BTR community, some information. I will just share those. And Keith, if you have any comments about the news I'm about to share with the listening audience, please feel free to make your views known. I came across this earlier today from the Jimmy Dore show. Now, I've had my differences with Jimmy Dore, but for the most part, he's a good source of information. He has a YouTube channel. He's a progressive His full-time job is as a comedian, but, you know, he's an independent journalist working through YouTube now. And he did a report today with Aaron Matei. Y'all may have seen Aaron Matei. He's a journalist for The Real News that's based in Baltimore with Paul Jay and some others that I know that work for that news outlet, The Real News. He also writes for The Intercept, another independent news outlet. But him, Aaron Matei and Jimmy Dore are commenting on a report that happened actually on ABC News, where you have this person who used to be in the federal government, who's no longer in the federal government. I think he was in the FBI, I'm not sure. But anyway, this guy says, get ready for a big letdown, because Mueller is not going to indict Trump on collusion, because there's no evidence of collusion. And they talk about, you know, how this investigation has been dragging on for 2 years now, but yet Trump hasn't been charged. There's not been an attempt to indict Trump. I mean, Mueller's not even saying that Trump. Remember, this is an investigation, okay, to see if Trump has colluded. And thus far, it's been a big fat nothing burger. And so here this guy is with so-called insider information. Again, he was on ABC News with George Stephanopoulos saying that, you know, my sources inside that's close to the Mueller investigation are saying that there's not going to be any collusion charges. What you think about that, Keith?
Can you still hear me? Where am I muted?
I can hear you.
Okay, the deal with collusion in itself isn't a real charge anyhow. So that was some of the things that they keep spitting around, because the president talked about there's no collusion. That's irrelevant. The charge is conspiracy, and they've got more than enough evidence to show conspiracy. His lawyer has admitted to it. The thing is, forget collusion.
Collusion and conspiracy is the same thing in legal terms, though, Keith.
Basically, yeah. But there's enough evidence for a conspiracy. His lawyer alone has put out enough for conspiracy. But even outside of conspiracy, you still have the old standby. How did they get what's old boy from the back in the gangster's day with the Valentine's Day massacre? You got Al Capone. Taxes. Yeah, Al Capone. You got tax violations. You've got all the situations with him earning a profit from his seat. There's so much stuff on Trump that whether they got clues or not, that's almost irrelevant. There's 1,000 charges that they have enough evidence to get them on right now. That would be my thought.
Okay. Well, next story, this one just came out this morning, is very concerning to me, you know, and it's really just confirmation for something that I had been praying on. But for those that don't know, a Jewish person contacted me, a Jewish white man. He told me that's what he was, a Jewish white man. He contacted me via email, said he's working as an English translator in Nigeria. And one of his students in his English class is a Christian, and he's a pastor. And he said that the Nigerian pastor, asked him about internet radio technology. And so he started doing research for the young man, and somehow his research brought him to me. And so an offer was made for me to come to Nigeria, and they will do a fundraiser and pay for everything to train this guy and his staff on how to operate radio, internet radio, what equipment they need, you know, just everything that has to do with how we do these radio broadcasts. And so I was like, well, let me get back to you. I'm going to have to think about this. And then I started feeling, first I was kind of excited at the opportunity to go over there and network and what have you. But then I was like, I don't know this person, never heard of this person. I don't have the resources to hire my own security team to go to Nigeria. Nigeria is not the most stablest places, even though, you know, you just had a terrorist attack in Kenya. That has been happening in Nigeria as well. Then you have tribal warfare going on in Nigeria between the nomadic, I forget how to pronounce what they're called, but they're nomads, basically. They just travel around with their cows and stuff like that. And, you know, they get into it with Nigerian farmers and what have you. Then this guy that I follow on Twitter from Nigeria tweeted out 2 days ago that the Nigerian government had been cracking down on journalists in the country and arresting people. So I was like, I don't know this person. I don't have the resources to hire Dave and a security team to go over there with me. I will basically be among strangers by myself. How do I know this isn't a setup? You know, you don't have to believe me, but since I launched Black Talk Radio Network, I have been on the U.S. intelligence services radar, so to speak. I actually have software that detected an intrusion from a building in Falls Church, Virginia. Well, that's pretty much intelligence country right there. So all of these things are in my mind, and I'm like, you know, I can just train this guy the same way I train Elliot Booker of Time for Awakening Radio, who has his own network, you know, that he leases the services through Black Talk Media Project. I was like, so I can do all, I've trained people online without needing to be right there physically with them because of technology. They can see everything I'm doing on my computer. I got cameras, I got video, all of that stuff. So there's no need for me to go to Nigeria. So then I come across this story this morning. Now, this woman wasn't arrested. This journalist, an African-American journalist, wasn't arrested in Nigeria or anywhere else in the world. She was arrested here in the United States and hasn't been charged with anything. This comes to you from the Huffington Post. It says that U.S. police arrest journalists working for Iran state TV. Well, regular listeners of Tando Radio Show know that that's one of the sources, news sources that Dave uses from time to time. I mean, he uses different sources from, you know, just various different news outlets. You know, some of them are alternative news outlets, some of them are state outlets, some of them are corporate outlets. And so, you know, we try to share the information, then break the information down. So this African-American woman, her name is Mazaya Hashemi, and she was arrested at St. Louis Lambert International Airport on Sunday and was being held in custody in Washington, D.C. without charge. She has worked for Iran's English language press TV and has done reports showing discrimination in the United States against African Americans, other non-white people, as well as Muslims. So here we got an American citizen being held without charge, and many would, what I would say, you should logically be able to deduce that it's because of her journalism in another country. All right, so Keith, I just wanted to share that. Did you have any thoughts on this African-American journalist who worked for Iran's press TV being arrested in the United States once she came here to visit family? And being held without charge.
I think a couple of things. But first off, let me start off with this. That's so interesting because I don't know if anybody watched any of that. The guy that they were trying to, they had the Senate screening. What's his name? Barr. That's looking to replace Sessions.
Yes, I think his name is William Barr.
Yeah. Well, one of their concerns from the Democratic Senate or the congressmen or legislators, whatever you want to call it, one of their main concerns was just that. How are you going to be able to treat the journalists? Are you going to require them to give up sources and be able to put them under arrest, those sort of things? What is the level of protection for the journalists? And they asked them that, And he didn't have a real answer for them. But that was one of their main concerns just yesterday. The other thing is, it was so interesting because one of the things that came out through the Patriot Act, and I remember this with Obama more than anything else. Now, there's things that Obama did that I didn't like, but nevertheless, I don't want to go there. I don't like to talk bad about the man. I know there's some things we can talk about, but I don't like to talk bad about the man. But with that being said, one of the things was the prison. What was that that a prison that they had on that island?
Guantanamo.
Where they were held, holding. There you go. So one of the determinations were, and it gets kind of deep because it reminds me of that old Tom Cruise movie when he was a police squad and they were going around and they would arrest people for crimes that hadn't happened yet, but they were going to. I don't know if you remember that movie or not.
Yeah, that was Minority Report with Tom Cruise.
There you go. So one of the things was with Guantanamo, which allowed them to do that, was a lot of those guys didn't have any charges. They were there because of the fact that they said if they weren't there, they were afraid of what these people would probably do if they weren't under detention, which is totally against our original Constitution and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
But because of the Patriot Act, et cetera, they were allowed to do those. So what's happening is you bring that in conjunction with what Trump is doing with belittling the journalists and taking away their protections and all of that kind of stuff. I would say that they can't do it. But the days in which we can say they can't do so and so and so and so, those days are behind us.
Well, when you say can't do it, when we say things like they can't do it, I think it'd be better to say that it's illegal for them to do certain things, but they do it anyway.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I'm glad that she's still alive. Because prior administrations have deemed American citizens enemy combatants and assassinated them while they were in foreign countries. So she might be lucky that she made it to the United States and that she has family and what have you. But she's saying that right now, saying that she hasn't eaten in 2 days, nothing but a pack of crackers because they keep serving her pork. You know, that's intentional. Serving her pork, not allowing her to observe her religious dictates or what have you. You know, they wear the head covering and all of that. So saying she's just totally being mistreated, but, you know, they have kidnapped people, disappeared them, and so she might be in a better position. It might be better that she was arrested here because they could have killed her, you know, so that she can then at least have access to the courts. But again, there have been American citizens. I'm thinking about Jose Padilla, who was accused of terrorism, and he was here on U.S. soil, and they pretty much just snatched him up using that designation as an enemy combatant. So, you know, the Constitution, we're supposed to have protections. But again, you know, what good is something on a piece of paper if there's nobody that's going to enforce those rules and what have you? So, you know, we're definitely headed towards what I feel like is a dictatorship, you know, in this country. So moving on.
Well, hold on. Before you move on, you said that she was a United States citizen?
She's an African-American. But she's been working for Iran's Press TV for the past 10 years.
And they arrested her with no charges?
There has been no charges filed. She's just simply being detained. They took her from the airport in St. Louis and took her to Washington, D.C.
How is she getting her story out?
After 2 days of being held, they finally allowed her one phone call, and she called her daughter.
Unbelievable. But I agree with you. We are definitely heading towards a dictatorship. And at this point in time, you know, I get in this conversation often, but if you look at what's being done, even more importantly, what's not being done.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that you talked about, that we talked about early in this conversation, with him not being indicted. One of the things that they're talking about, and I might have addressed this yesterday, I don't know, but they were saying that if Putin had his wish list, it would be to remove ourselves from the United Nations. It would be to relieve their sanctions against Russia. It would be to move out of Syria. And there was one other one, you know, but everything that they say would be an absolute wonderful present to Putin, these are the things that he's doing. And yet, with that being the case, nobody is doing anything to stop him.
Stop who? Trump?
Trump.
Well, so when you look at Syria, the next story is about Syria. It was shared on Twitter by Cynthia McKinney, a former U.S. Congresswoman. But, you know, again, when we look at Syria, we're talking about an illegal occupation. Under international law, this is an illegal occupation. Under U.S. law, this is an illegal occupation. Congress never voted to authorize troops to be inside of Syria in the first place. So, it doesn't matter what Putin wants. What matters is this is a pattern of the U.S. government and the military-industrial complex just interjecting themselves and actually starting conflict after conflict after conflict after conflict. Now, I don't know, listeners, if y'all remember this, but I said when Donald Trump announced that the 2,000 advisors, quote unquote, because that's all they're supposed to be, is advisors that's in Syria illegally, that he was pulling them out. Now, I said this, I believe I said it on Tando Radio Show. I said, don't be surprised, or it might have been BTR community. I said, don't be surprised if there are some false flag attacks to make up this pretext of, oh, now we got to stay in Syria. See, ISIS ain't gone. So Cynthia McKinney sent out this tweet. She said, Mr. President, why are U.S. soldiers still in Syria? Why is she asking that question? Because U.S. service members, according to Yahoo.com, have been killed in a bomb blast in Syria. And the U.S. military confirmed this today. And so, you know, I again tweeted out, I just talked about this when Trump announced the Syria pullout. Don't be surprised if there are some false flags attacks on American troops, so that then the pressure could be put on Trump to maintain the illegal occupation of this sovereign nation. Keith, your thoughts?
I agree with you 100%. But just like what you said, Syria is no exception to the rule. That's almost this country's SOP. And at this point in time, it's everything is everything. Everything is smoke and mirrors and misdirection, including the shutdown. This shutdown doesn't have nothing to do with this wall. I mean, if it had to do with the wall, how could they be allowing so much destruction taking place inside this country because of the shutdown?
Mm-hmm.
Again, a guy that goes back to the original point, if those were the cases, how come nobody's stepping up to stop all this stuff? They're letting it go. They know the veracity of the situation. They know how bad this is. They know how much it's deteriorating and everything. Turtle Face McConnell, he knows this stuff. But yet they're letting this stuff go on. You've got to ask yourself why.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're so far down the road of being the dictator, you know, and all of it. If you go back to, I think we talked about this before too, Trump's book that he had by his bedside was Mein Kampf. And if you read Mein Kampf, he is going down a step-by-step-by-step playbook of taking the country to a dictatorship.
Mm-hmm.
and we're watching this stuff unfold before our eyes, and we have a mentality that we hear about it, we're shocked about it, and then we move on the next day like it never happens, but we're still on that same path to dictatorship.
You
and
know,
it's just getting worse and worse and worse.
You know, some would argue, and I would be one of those that would argue, is that I hate to sound like this, but I have to be truthful and honest. If this country descends into some kind of dictatorship, you reaping what you sow. Because how long have you supported American empire in every president who has dictated to the rest of the world what they can and cannot do? And if they didn't do what the United States government wanted them to do, then they kill a bunch of they people. They attack them and bomb them with no mercy. And I mean, look at Libya now. So this country has long been a dictator as a government to the rest of the world. So you've been on this slippery slope for a very long time, and the masses of the people haven't had a care in the world, as all these other people around the world have been mistreated and dictated to by the United States, because they get you to buy into this nationalism gang mentality. So that's how I feel about it, man. You know, I don't worry about these things because of my faith. I'm gonna be all right. And if I ain't all right, I'm already prepared to die anyway. So, I mean, what can you hold over me? What I'm gonna live in fear about? I'm already don't care about, you know, I shouldn't say it that way, but I have no fear of dying. You know, who wants to continue to live this existence on this miserable planet the way it is? So, you know, I have no fear of death. So whatever comes. Last story before we turn it over to
Brooke. Let me respond to what you just got to say. Okay. And I agree with you 100%. You know, according to the word, Paul says to die is a gain. And if you're a child of God, you're absolutely right. Now, do we know if our work here is done or not? That's something that you have to internally inspect yourself to find out. But I agree with you 100%. But just to piggyback on your other point, if you can't remember all the way back when President Obama was trying to be elected, one of the main thorns in his side that they put there was his pastor, Reverend Wright. And they talked about, well, what they did was they took a lot of stuff out of a sermon out of context, and they said he said all these things out of context and stuff. But one of the things that he was saying was exactly what you're saying. Look, the United States has done all these things, just like you said, to all these other countries and stuff, without concern of the people in these other countries, et cetera. And he says it's going to come a time in which the pigeons, where the chickens are going to come with the roost, which is exactly what you said, which is exactly what we're looking at. I agree with you 100%. You reap what you sow. And we're starting to reap what we've been sowing for decades and decades. Okay. That was just my two.
And this is the last story. And I mentioned this, or I asked this question on Twitter. And I asked this years ago, you know, when ISIS was really, really just first emerging. And I'm looking at these pictures and I'm like, that's a M16 that dude got. What the heck? Where did they get that U.S. military truck? That's the trucks we was driving. The deuce and a half. And where are they getting all this American-made weaponry from? Who's supplying them? And I'm like, okay, I've been in a war zone. And you don't have to be in a war zone. Just have common sense, right? That you can't wage war without a supply line. You got to be resupplied if you're going to wage war. And I'm like, so we got this ragtag bunch of so-called, you know, Islamic mercenaries all going to Iraq, going to Syria to set up, you know, I forget what they was calling a little would-be nation or what have you. And I'm like, okay, but how are they lasting this long? Where are they getting their ammunition from? Who's resupplying them with ammunition? Where are they getting these weapons from? That's a question that's not being asked in corporate media. And, you know, in some alternative media, I've read that the Israelis and Mossad has been arming them terrorists. That was the whole reason behind taking out Gaddafi, who was a U.S. ally at the time. Remember, Gaddafi gave up his quest for weapons of mass destruction, came in so-called out of the cold, became a signed an agreement, became an ally with the United States government in 2005, and had been hunting Islamic terrorists and put a lot of them in prison in Libya. So, you know, there was the CIA was spotted at a Libyan weapons depot preparing weapons for shipment to where? To Syria. So now, though, I got a little bit of confirmation, you know, to some of them other earlier reports. And then just me having common sense. Look, you can't be an army and fight this long without somebody supplying you. You have to have a state sponsor. So anyway, RT Today came out with this report, said former Pentagon official Michael Maloof talked to RT America's, Manila Chan about the omission by the outgoing Israeli Defense Forces chief that Israel has been supplying weapons to Syrian rebel forces for years, citing a threat from Iran. Of course, they're going to use that excuse. But again, I ask you to just use a little bit of common sense. Let's say that a bunch of us, let's say me and 1,000 dudes said we was going to go to wherever we go and we going to wage war. Okay, we going to take North Carolina back and we going to declare our sovereignty from the United States. But look, we ain't going to last too long if we ain't got no source of weapons and ammunition and all the other supplies you need to wage war, you know? So I just think that this is just confirmation to what some reporters had already been putting out there. There's no way ISIS is lasting this long without some kind of state sponsorship. Keith?
Yeah. But I think most definitely, again, that would be the SOP of how we do things, but I think ISIS probably got a whole lot of state sponsors.
More than one.
Not just coming from one place.
I agree. You know, Turkey was accused of helping them sell some of that oil. I'm talking about ISIS, the terrorists. They have been accused in some outlets of helping them to sell the oil that these terrorists had confiscated or gotten a hold of inside of Syria. But yeah, so that's that story. Israel, an outgoing Israeli military official admits that they've been arming so-called Syrian rebels inside of Syria. So, unless there's anything else, Keith, that you have, I'm go ahead and turn it over to Team Davis. We got about 30 minutes to the top of the hour when we'll take our first break. Did you have anything that you want to share, Keith?
No, sir. I'm good. Thank you.
All right. So at this time, let me go ahead and bring Team Davis online. Team Davis, do we have you?
Yes, I'm here. Richard, are you there? Richard, are you there? Okay. Well, I'm here.
Okay.
This is part B of the Davis team. Richard, are you there? Okay. We're in two different locations. So
okay. If he called in from the other line, I'm not sure. But if he's on another line, hit star to unmute yourself, Brother Davis. I don't want to call out phone numbers. It's a 7701 here. I know y'all had a farm in Georgia. Is that his line?
No, I'm the 803. He's the 717.
Okay, no, he's not on the board.
Okay, well, he should connect soon then. So let's just go ahead and get started. I'll just do fly solo for a minute. Welcome, Tando listeners, to the Wise Wednesday with the Davis team, and this is Sister Davis, and we are in two different locations. I'm here at the farm, and he's out and about, kind of working, so he's out and about. He was on the line earlier, so hopefully he'll be back momentarily. But we wanted to bring you some information of what we've been doing the last few months, and it has been enlightening. It has been very, very enlightening for us, especially me, but for the both of us. And as you know, there had been some long planning that we had a family farm that was purchased with family. And, okay, now my husband said for me to call him. I guess he got knocked off. Scotty, I don't know. Can you call anybody out or anything?
Yeah, give me a second. I was just about to call him with the 717.
No, hold on. No, no, he's calling me now. Hold on.
Okay.
Richard, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay. Scotty, are you there?
Yes, we can hear him.
Okay. All righty. I apologize for the technical difficulties, but, you know, that is what live radio does, is everything is live. Mr. Davis, I did just kind of start the call a little bit, and I said welcome. So do you want to do a welcome real quick?
Yes. Thank you for brothers and sisters for allowing us to enjoy your part of your day with you. We are in the boonies. We are out in the rural area, and believe me, that's part of the problem. But the best part about this is that I really wanted to give you some insights on what we have gone through to accomplish what we have. Let me give shouts out to my wife. Yesterday was our anniversary for the 36 years, so thank you very much for your loving and your dedication. And believe me, I could not have done this without her cooperation, y'all. Because literally we have done everything. In order to get the water to the house, in order to get hot water in the house, food, washing laundry, all of these things that you see every day as a convenience, in reality, it serves a greater purpose when you supply the necessary things for you to achieve them. That means that you don't need to run to a laundry and give them your money. See, out here, your resources are only worthy of how you invest them. And we have invested things like many a dollars in concrete. I know some of you are probably saying concrete, yes, but we had to put footers in to the RV situation that we're here. And we had to invest in learning the land because we live down here in the area where they call the earth sugar sand. Now, what does sugar sand mean? I tell you, all these technologies and terminologies that I'm using to you, I'm really just learning these because of the region of the country I live in. And when you do move to a new region, these sort of things, they become a cost for you to learn them if you don't have someone that is local to give you insight into the various local customs, the various local, what they call normalities, but it's really abnormal for... Well, I can't say it's abnormal because in the South, there are areas where it's just sand, and that's one of the areas we live in. So, Erica, would you like to add something to that?
Yes. Yeah, it is. You do have to take a lot of information from the area that you're around, the type of trees, the type of grass, the type of insects, because down in this area we have, and Scotty probably has them in North Carolina too, they're called fire ants. Now, they're not too much out here right now as far as the fire ants because of the climate, but once it starts getting warmer, they'll be more prevalent. And they look like a regular little red ant. They're not gigantic. They're not black. They're just kind of like that reddish brown, but they bite. They bite. Ooh, they bite. It's not like a mosquito bite, something that you might not feel. You're going to feel these. And you can walk into their little mound that just looks like a little mound on the ground. You really don't see them till you stir it up. So you have to be very conscious of where you're walking, what you're doing. If you're going to put a tent up or something like that, kind of, you know, look at the land, look around, see what's there, because if you put it on their mound, you got a problem. Then, of course, you do have mosquitoes. Right now, it's still kind of cool, so they haven't really erupted too bad. And you have flies, you have bees. So, you know, you just have to be conscious of even the insects that are around, the other animals that are around. We have deer here. We have wild turkeys. Every so often in the sky, you can see buzzards that are, you know, kind of circling because there might be a dead animal on the road, and they're kind of using that for food. So you see them stirring everywhere. There's rabbits and There's some coyotes in this area. I haven't personally seen any, but from what I understand, there's coyotes in the area. We've seen foxes. Now, our property does have three ponds. I haven't went fishing yet, but we do have three ponds, and they are stocked with fish. And we don't stock them or anything. They just continually have babies. And so we have fished in it, not this season, but prior seasons, as we, you know, about the last year or so, we have fished in it. So we have, I know there's catfish in it and different types of carp, and there's some bass, and there's some trout. Haven't really seen the trout, but we know they're there. But I'm just going to give, you know, that's just giving you an idea. You have to be really aware of what your surroundings are. And then you also have to be aware of how far everything is. Of course, where we were from, you know, Walmart's not far, Family Dollar, Dollar Tree, you know, all your little local conveniences are right in your general area. And now they are not. They are very far. The biggest, the really, really big town is probably 45 miles away. And there's other little smaller towns that are within, I'd say, 20 miles. Closest Walmart's about 25 miles. It's that kind of thing. So when you go to town, you better have a list. You better know what you're doing, because you're not going to want to take that gasoline that you need for everyday life to put in a car to go back and forth. You're not going to do that back and forth thing. Unfortunately, when we first got down here, we needed supplies, and we learned the hard way about going back and forth. Oh, I forgot this, or this doesn't work. Let me use that. Let me go back to the store to get it. And you have to even be conscious of the time of day. Like, for example, if you got to go to town, it's going to take you 45 minutes to get there. And you have to be conscious of the daylight, because you don't want to go middle of the afternoon, spend all your time there, travel back, and 4:30 is dark. And at that time, it was 4 o'clock, it was dark. Now we're getting a little bit more, since the equinox, we're getting a little bit more longer daylight. So everything comes into play. Everything comes into play to narrow it down to everything you're doing. Where, because we were truck drivers, we had a little bit probably more training than the average person, because when we were truck drivers, we had to be aware of your surroundings and the travel time and the sunlight and your sleep time and your wake time and your eat time. So that was a serious regiment that put us in gear. Wouldn't you say, Mr. Davis?
Absolutely. And another thing we want you to understand is this. We're only doing this and projecting this to you because as things begin to change, we're going to revert back to taking care of ourselves, self-efficiency, which is what our parents were literally taught long before Westernism came into play. You see, one of the things about Westernism is that it gets you to a life at convenience. And in the life of convenience, it takes away the responsibility that is required for you to sustain the quality of life for yourself. So this is definitely an eye-opener. I mean, we had a well dug. We had a septic tank put in.
No, baby. Go back and talk about the well. Let's just give them some idea of what wells are, what wells aren't, and just give them a little synopsis about that.
Okay, wells are what is dug in order to find water in the ground. Now, South Carolina is what they call a low-lying water area. So that means that it's a lot of South Carolina is below the sea level. But it's an actual aquifer in the southeast. So there's water almost in every area under the ground, in almost every area of South Carolina. But unless you know where to look, you have a problem. In some places, you only have to dig down 4 or 5 feet. In some places, 2 and 3 feet. In other places, 14, 15 feet. So the dynamics of how you do what you do comes into play, because if you don't have that experience, once again, there's a cost involved. Yeah, you can have someone dig it for you, but if you have to dig it yourself, you have to prepare for that. And there are tools that specifically are designed for that. So if you want to be a farmer or live in the rural area, you can do it yourself. But on the other hand, there is a multiplicity of tasks that are involved in being able to not only find water, drill the water, but then get the water to your facility in a manner in which you can get water on the level on which you need it. In other words, if my wife wants to wash the dishes, that water has to be available. We're not talking about going out and carrying it back and forth. Well, we did that in the beginning, but not now.
Yes, and we really did that in the beginning. We did not have, once, on this particular land, there are wells here, and they were already tapped, but they were covered. But they were already kind of pre-dug, which was great. That was a big savings, because other than that, we would have had to get equipment in here to actually dig the hole if you thought there was water there and try to tap it yourself. But they were already tapped, so we had to get a motorized pump to pump up the water from underneath. Now, I guess all of y'all on the show could probably remember when they had those kind of hand cranks that you pump up and down. We don't have that type. Right now we have an electric one, but we are going to get a pumping one on one of the other taps, because if there's no electricity, there's nothing running, the pump won't work. So you still have to have a plan B. So and it was really nice to see how that was constructed and how that was put in. We bought it at the hardware store, and my husband and his brother, they constructed it and they put it together and they tapped it into the well. I don't know which of you want to go further involved with that, but that's about, what is that, about 25 feet? No, that's more than that. About 75 feet from our building?
Yeah, it's about 25 yards, which is 25
yards. Yeah, 75 feet, yeah.
And that trench had to be dug by hand. Now, you could pay machinery. There's some machinery you can get to do that, but this is a part of this process. And literally, I dug that trench. And in digging that trench, I began to learn the dynamics of levels. You have to have the trench dug deep enough so that when it gets cold, the pipes don't freeze. And you don't really think about that when you're doing it, but the more you become experienced in the area, the more of the dynamics that come into play. Remember, I told you that this is the stuff called sugar sand, which means it's just sandy earth. But what does sugar sand mean? That means that if there's a water that runs up against it, it's going to shift the sand. Understand that dynamic? It shifts the sand. So that means it's going to have effect on the foundation. And that's why the pillars came into play, because we had to put brand new feeders in there to sustain the weight. And when we realized that the footers that we put in were 8 and 12 inches and were not big enough, literally we had to do something else.
Well, I just want to back up a little bit about the pump. So the pump is 75 feet away from our facility, our RV. So we had to dug the trench to connect the pipe. So he took PVC pipe and connected it, and you had to do special type of gluing, and you connected this PVC pipe that went from the pump to the house. Now that's stuff that's underneath your house, homes and everything, but it's already manufactured. It's already there. So you don't see it. You don't worry about it. All you know is that you pay the water bill and you expect to have water to come out your faucet. So once we put that pipe in the ground, he had to cover it, and then we had to have an electrical source from our electrical source, which is our generator, to the pump, and you have to turn it on. So we turn that on. We have a hose at the end of the PVC pipe is a hose, and every time the pump starts, we want to start the water again, we have to let the water run because it sucks up sand first. Sand is, you know, it's in a well, so it's going to pull up a lot of dirty water first. It's not really dirty. It's fresh, but it's cloudy. It has sand and dirt in it. So you let it run for about 10 or 15 minutes until it gets clear. And then we connect that to our RV, and we fill the tanks inside of RV. Then we turn the power off because there's power to the pump. We turn that off, and then there is power in the RV that will pump the individual pump that's in the RV and give us water in our toilet and our faucets. Now, this farm thing is something that we made a choice for. This is what we wanted. We wanted to be off-the-grid living, do the best we could with off-the-grid living. This is a choice that we are making. And as difficult as it is, it's a labor of love, and we're doing it. My understanding, I'm sorry, yes?
I just wanted to add right there, when she said it's a labor of love, we're planning on this going generational. Now, the reason being is because literally the way things look right now, we have to plan ahead. We can't wait to the last minute. Our grandchildren will be out here all summer long or before if the economy goes in a twisted manner. So I just wanted to add that. Go ahead, darling.
Right. And like I said, this is a choice we are making. We've done, and over the different shows over the couple of months prior, you know, we were talking about this. We were planning it, as best we know how, you know, talking with other people about planning it. And but to our surprise, it's a lot more work. It's a lot of work. Labor of love, though, but it's a lot that you got to think about. Thank goodness to YouTube University. That university is off the chain, because if we didn't know how to do something, we would consult somebody, and then we would also look at YouTube videos. Then, of course, you have to figure out a little bit, because everything on YouTube isn't exactly what you need. It just gives you an understanding of what you need, and you just go ahead and tweak it and play with it, see what works, see what doesn't work. Takes a lot of patience, takes a lot of time, and you got to do things in moderation, because by 4 or 5 o'clock in the evening, you don't have any light. I mean, when it's dark, it's pitch dark out here, so you got to get everything done before then, which is okay. You just pace yourself. But like I said, it's a labor of love. We're making this choice, but due to this shutdown, we're not going to really talk about shutdown and everything in this segment, I don't think, on the show today. But I do want to say that with this shutdown, now everybody knows a little bit more about saving finances. We can see the government workers, you know, going to the food banks and all of that. So just keep in mind, if everything goes back to normal and life is like it was, you still need to plan. If things don't go well with the government and it's month after month after month, a lot of dominoes are going to be falling, and you might have to be shoved into a better understanding of how living like this, or living off the grid, or just downsizing really is. So you can plan a little bit, or wait until the planning is forced. It might not be forced, but it's just something to think about. And you can actually play games with it now while you have the chance. Right now, you can, if you have a family, you could go hiking. You can do a game called Lights Out. And I think I've mentioned it on a Tando show before, where you can just turn your electrical box off or make it limited. Of course, you don't want your refrigerator off all night or all weekend, but you could play a game at home. It doesn't even have to be with your children. It could be by yourself. It could be with your spouse or a family. And just act like there's no electricity coming to your house. Just see what you would do for extended time. Now, some of these people that are in the weather-driven situations where there's no power because of snow or rain or flooding, they're forced to play that game. And it's not an easy game, because when you wake up one day and just say a bad storm came through, hit the power lines, and you don't have any electricity, in the back of your mind, within a day or so, it's going to be back on. Within a couple of hours, it's going to be back on. So you put a coat on and you open up a can of something and you might read a book. But if that was your day-to-day living, how would you adapt? Because here we have no electricity. We have no standard electricity coming from the pole. We have a generator. And every day that generator needs to be fed. It needs to be fed gasoline. Now, one good thing is in the South right now, we're all over the nation, gas has dropped, thank goodness, because I don't know what we would do paying $3 a gallon. Right now, we're paying $180 something like that. And we have to feed that beast. And you have to monitor what you're doing. Do you want evening electricity in your house? Okay, well then, during the day, don't have so much on. You have to conserve. So the first couple of days, I'd say the first week, we didn't know how much energy we needed versus what the generator was going to give us. So we had to play around with it a little bit. Now we know. Now we're very good about having it on in the evening. Richard goes to work in the morning. We have it on a little bit in the morning because it's cold, because all night we don't have it on. So we are hunkered down with our blankets and our long johns and our socks on. It's comfortable. I mean, it's not impossible, But next week, we will be faced with lower temperatures. As a matter of fact, in the South, one of the things that we did not expect is that it has rained. I'm not sure up where Scotty's at in North Carolina if it's been raining like that, like this. But down here in South Carolina, even on the news, they said this is the rainiest fall winter that they've had on record for a number of years. And it's been raining every weekend since October. We had two weekends that it didn't rain. One was the Saturday before Christmas. It didn't rain. It was kind of a little cloudy, little showers a little bit, but basically we would consider that no rain. And last weekend we had a whole weekend, two whole days, that the sky was blue without any clouds. It was pure sunshine. Other than that, every weekend it rained. Now, sometimes it rains during the week, sometimes it doesn't, but of course you tend to do more things on the weekend. And it's been raining every weekend. And I'm telling you, when I say rain... it's the rain you can't see past. It's not like thunder showers where it just kind of comes through and it stops and it goes. This is rain where it's beating on the ground. And, I mean, you can go out and do what you got to do. You put a raincoat on, whatever, but you really can't do anything outside. It's pouring rain in. And then the temperatures have been a little lower down here than normal. Next week there is a polar. I don't know, for everybody on the show, you might want to watch the news. There is a polar vortex that is supposed to be descending next week from Canada, coming on down, and everybody's going to have cooler temperatures. Also, there's some snowstorms coming across the from California, just coming straight across the coast. Thank goodness we're not in that truck riding around. Oh my goodness, I'm so glad, because usually they hit us in the Midwest. So right now, most of the interstates are down, and there's a lot of havoc with that, because I know up in Scotty's neck of the woods, I think he got some snow. Scotty, did you get a lot of snow? Hello?
Yeah, we got some, but it wasn't a whole lot. I'm used to getting more snow. Well, it hasn't been, let me put it this way, in the 80s, I remember, you know, us having a winter. Thus far, this season, it snowed one time, but it has been raining.
Okay. Has been raining. Yeah, it's interesting the way the weather is tending to change, and I think by having these nice days and cool and, you know, milder winters, we get very accustomed to that, and then, boom, we get socked with a bunch of snow, and, you know, people don't have shovels, and they don't have the necessities. So I don't know if that's a trend that's kind of messing with our psyche so that we are not prepared, because a lot of people aren't prepared. Even in the East Coast, where they know it's going to snow, you know, they can't find the shovels, or they can't find the salt that they need, or, you know, they're just not conscious of it, because we have had several years of not bad weather. But I do know that wherever everybody is on the call, just kind of look and see what's coming down the pike next week. They are expecting a lot colder temperatures. The upper Northeast, I heard them say about in our Pennsylvania area where we are from, they're talking like 3 degrees is the high. So and maybe minus degrees are the low. In this area, they're talking our lows will be in the teens, like 11 and 12. We're going to have a warm weekend, and then it's going to dip on Monday or Tuesday. So that's stuff we need to know ahead of time, just so that we can prepare.
I just wanted to add that it may seem like we're pointing things out that really doesn't have a great relevance to you. But we're putting it out because when you change your circumstances, these things can be paramount. If you do not plan for this, it can not only affect how your day operates, it can literally affect your food chain. You understand the dynamic here? So all of these things come into play in being responsible and taking control of your life. Because they're not bad things. My wife will tell you, we've grown quite a bit as a marriage and as individuals, because she's looking at the dynamic from a woman's perspective, and I'm looking at it from a man's perspective. And she came out to me one day when I was actually mixing concrete and putting it in footers, and she was like, "Baby, I'm going to tell you something. I don't know how you do it. I mean, you just, it's heavy. You literally got to mix it with water. then you got to pour it precisely. When I say precisely, you want it to make sure that there's no air pockets in it. And then and after you do that, you want to make sure that it's tight against the rebar. I know some of these terms sound a little bit outlandish to you guys who are not familiar with them, but all of these things come into play in building a sanctuary that you can depend upon. And literally, wherever your circumstance is, you're going to have the ability to make a shelter. And literally, my wife and I, we had talked about it, and we had considered a number of different things. But the reason why we chose the way we chose was because there were certain conveniences that if we just connected to them, we could make them more conducive to what we're trying to do. Our water source connected to it. Our energy source, we're connected to it. Now, we are evolving to solar. We are right now in the process of looking for purchasing some probably 300, 340-watt solar panels. I know a lot of people aren't even thinking about it. But we need a certain amount of wattage to be able to sustain our living facility at times of seasonal change. And one of the best resources for that is solar. So we don't have to regenerate all of the resources. You mentioned our generator. I have to have gas for that every day. And you have a system about it because you can overuse it. Some days that generator is running 12 hours a day. It may be intermittent 12 hours, but it's 12 hours a day. So I have to check it for the oil content. I have to even change the oil. See, all of these things become a part of having a quality of life under diverse circumstances. Now, once I get the solar system connected in, then the generator won't play such a major role. But say the weather comes, the weather changes the dynamic of the solar system, I have the generator as a backup. And I'm pointing this out to you because literally, you cannot depend on any one thing but yourself. Let me repeat that. You can't depend on any one thing but yourself. Would you like to add, darling?
Yes, I'd like to add that even though we have a well, even though we have electricity for the well, for the pump and everything, if the electricity goes out, let's say the grid goes down, the major grid, and nobody has electricity, that means we have water on our land that we still can't get to. Now, there's ponds and things like that, but unless you have a hand pump and it's pumping up that well, you're not going to get any water. So even though we have that, I'm still conserving water because, no. One thing you know when you're out and about in the wilderness is the value of water. And the value of water, even if you're carrying it, because we carried water for the first week back and forth. We needed water, then we put it in a bucket and we carried it. Scotty, is it time for a break?
Oh, yes, it is.
Okay.
All right, you're listening to Tando Radio Show. Wise Wednesday on this January 16, 2019. We'll be right back after this quick message.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
And we're back.
Are we back on air? Okay. Now, I think I paused around the time when I said about if the pump didn't work and the water, we don't have water, we're back to not having water because there's no electricity, we don't have a hand pump, and now we're thirsty. So what we've been doing is still conserving water. Like everybody that's on this call, if you don't do anything else in the next couple of days, think about conserving water. Because you can go without eating, but you cannot go without drinking. So we were using a lot of bottled water there for a while.
Hey,
and
sister,
every so often, if we see, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, you know, we have a well. Basically, everybody around here where I live have a well because we don't live in a city. If you don't, I mean, you could also hook up a generator. You know, if you got a generator, you can get that pump back working to draw your water. And if all else fails, you can just use the old-fashioned way and get a rope and a bucket.
Yes, Yes, you can. Yes. We don't have our circumference of our well isn't large enough for the rope in a bucket theory for where we're at here. We have to look into doing that next, or at least getting a pump, maybe on one of the, we have two other wells here that are tapped, and we might do a pump on one of the other wells so that this one will be use the generator or electricity. But you know, a lot of times people think, okay, if the lights go out, we're just going to use the generator. Well, generators make a lot of noise. Even if you get the very high-priced ones that are, they say are silent, they're not absolutely silent. There's still a vibration and there's still a noise. And I always remember Dave would always say, one thing you don't want to do in a blackout is look like a Christmas tree. And he's referring to, if everybody else's lights out and your house is all lit up and it's dark and everybody can see your house is lit up with lights, they know you have resources. Then they come for your resources because you're like a little Christmas tree. So that's always something to always keep in mind. Oh, I guess my husband must have dropped off because he's calling me. Hold on one moment, please.
Are you still there? Okay. Just piggyback off of what she was talking about with the generators. You can go to YouTube, university, as some people call it. I often use it, you know, to find out how to do something, as people will make videos of them completing certain tasks. But you can make a box that will quiet a generator. I started to make one when we went to Washington, D.C., needed generators for the PA system when we went for the Millions for Prisoners Human Rights March, and I was kind of concerned about it might being too loud since it was going to be right next to the stage, but fortunately it wasn't that loud, but I had considered making a box, but I didn't have time to make one. But you can make a box that muffles the noise coming off of a generator. Do we have you back, Team Davis?
Yes, I'm sorry. It didn't merge correctly, but yes, we're here. Richard, you're there, right? Richard? Oh, goodness. Let me see what's going on. Hold on. Richard, are you there? Richard, are you there?
Yes, I'm here, darling.
Okay, I apologize, everybody. It's technical difficulties because he is at work, but we said we were going to come on today, and we wanted to make that fact to come on today. So just everybody, please bear with us. But I did, Scotty is correct. You can make a more muffle, you can make a box, and we're going to do that in the next couple of weeks. We're going to make a box. But people do, it will vibrate, you know, just depending on how close people are, what type of ear they're listening for. But it you know, you gotta, you know, there's always compromises to almost everything you do. That's why we were also looking at solar, because solar is quiet, of course, as long as there's sunshine, as long as it's bright clouds. I mean, it can be cloudy depending on what type of clouds and how dense they are, but you can get energy on a cloudy day, and you store it in batteries. So then you have energy that you're using moment to moment, or you can store it in your batteries, and then you can use that in the evening when there is no sun. So there's different ways about it. And right now we could play around with it because we're in that environment to play around. But as time goes on and perhaps situations change, we always, you know, you might have to just go with that change. But one of the biggest changes is just the fact that you don't have electricity. So once again, like I said, I still collect bottled water because we have well water, so it's free. It isn't like nobody's paying for it. So any empty bottles that I have, I refill them. So the bottles that you use for, you know, bottled water, instead of throwing those out, you can hold on to them. And when you have some time, or for us, we can do it because it's free. But years ago, I used to conserve water by keeping a large pitcher by my kitchen faucet and the bathroom faucet. Because when you run your cold water to make hot water, you know, you turn the hot water spigot on, it's not hot right away. It's usually a gallon or so that is wasted down the drain until your water, your cold water, turns warm and hot. So I used to always, you know, put a pitcher there and collect that water. And back then, I used to use that water to give it to the dog or water the plants. But I saw the value of water then because we were paying for it. And once, you know, because when you pay for water, you're actually paying for every drop. We think of it in gallons and of water or water consumption. But actually, every drop is costing a fraction of a fraction. So when that becomes either super expensive or becomes very limited, you have a different respect for it. So with all the empty bottles that we have, I put water back in it and we store it, you know, in the shed, or we have a little places that we store it. Because if you have to use, if the water, to say if there's no water, grid goes down or lights go out, power goes down, you don't want to sacrifice your drinking water for bathroom water or water that you have to cook with or water that you have to wash with. So I will have all of the reused water bottles kind of labeled. I put a T on it. I just put an alphabet T on it or a star. And then we'll know that that is used water, you know, water that's been used in the bottles. And then we would still have some either bottled water handy. But what I'm saying is that just don't reflect on, oh, I have a well and that's all I need, because wells go dry too, you know, or wells get contaminated. So you should always think of conserving it somewhere. And one of the best places are the empty water bottles that you already have and you already use. You can also use your old milk jugs that have orange juice. You know, now I look at everything as, what can I use this container for? Or what can I use this resource for? For example, unpacking. We had stuff that we unpacked that I had used newspaper for. Back in the day, I just throw that newspaper out. Now I keep that newspaper. Because guess what? There's no newspapers being delivered here. You know how you take that for granted that every couple of days, and you know, you have newspaper hanging around, or newspaper that you're reading and you have it excess. Well, we don't have that here. So I just keep old paper, you know, paper that has been wrapped with items like mugs or whatever, you know, it's wrapped with. I just keep that because I don't know what I might need that for. That might be our next source for fire, or next source for wrapping something out. So I just have to think about a lot of little things.
We have a call on the board from area code 470. Did you have a question or comment?
Okay, Erica, take the call, please.
Okay.
Hey, Sister Davis, this is Rob out of Atlanta. I had a quick question. With your solar system, are you considering a battery bank? Because I've been looking on YouTube University. You know, like once I'm able to set up a solar panel, I might have to get consult an electrician the first time just so I can watch him do it and get it set up properly. Far as you know, your battery banks and your charge controller and everything else that's involved. Could you elaborate on that? Or that is
yes.
Okay, Eric, I'll take this one.
Yeah,
right.
Go ahead, take that.
Okay, brother, listen, I'm gonna tell you something. There's a multiplicity of angles out there. Yes, you want a battery bank. Why? Because you want to be able to store with energy when you need it. Then, because in the situation that you're in the house, you use a 120 current, which is a direct current. Okay, in a situation with your solar power, you're going to have a converter to literally convert to the current that you want. Now, what does that mean? That means that we're in a 50 amp RV. So there are some parts of it that require a direct current and other parts that require an alternator current. Now, just to give you a quick background, the reason why it requires alternating current is because it has certain things in it that literally require not as much electricity. I got 12-watt bulbs in a lot of throughout the whole RV. Now, 12-watt bulbs, why do I have that? Because they require a little amount of electricity to sustain them for a long period of time. But yet, we also have a refrigerator, we have a microwave, we also have a heating system that requires an electrical connection in order to get to the fire to ignite and fire the propane. So all of these things come into play. And when I say they come into play, you definitely got to get deeper into understanding how solar is working. I'm shopping batteries also. The lithium batteries are good, and they are expensive, and they are the best out there. But lead-based batteries are good, too. They're good for 5 to 8 years if you sustain them. And you also want to keep in mind sustaining. Remember I talked about the generator, how I had to change the oil and that sort of thing? Every machine has a sustaining process. Learn that sustaining process. Because even with your solar panels, you have to clean them from time to time because they get dust and buildup, as well as rain and that sort of thing. When rain comes, when dust blows after a rainstorm, that dust sticks to the water sticks to the panel itself. So you have to have a way of maintaining getting it to the panel so you can clean it. I'm caught right now between putting my panels on top of the RV or putting my panels on the ground. And a lot of people get caught in this circumstance because literally they have the option. I don't require a field full of panels. I only require maybe 6 panels, 8 panels on the high end. But I do require 8 batteries because I have to get the batteries to give me what's called a sustainable voltage. Now, a sustainable voltage depends on how your batteries are wired. So you're going to learn about parallel wiring and alternate wiring. All of these things come into play. You can't have too much knowledge, brother. And that's what I'm trying to tell you. So get as much as you can. Keep us in the loop. I believe you have our email address. If you don't, connect with Dave for our email address or our phone number. And the only reason why I'm not giving it out publicly is because I've done that before, and that was a rampage on my time. So I don't mind helping. I don't even mind setting up a blog if there are enough people interested in it that are going into that direction. This is why we're doing the show. The reason why we want to be able to get the information out there is because society has already reflected that we may have to come to this. So do connect with Dave or Scotty if you can, Scotty, and he wants my email address or whatever. Give it to him. Let us contact with each other, and then we'll go from there. Let me say, if the demand is great enough, I will set up a blog. Excellent. Okay.
But that was a great question about the solar panels. That was a great question about the solar panels, because there are some government agencies that will put solar panels on your home. I guess I'm not sure of all the dynamics, but a lot of people do have solar panels on their home, and they use partial electricity, partial solar panel. But of course, you have a manufacturer that comes in and does all the conversion and everything. And I don't know if they allow people to watch that. Maybe they do, but you know, I do know the people are saying that the government will buy back your excess solar power. It's some kind of way they buy that back, and it sounds like a good program for people that are doing it, but it's still government controlled, so they do still have a cap on what you're doing. It's like it belongs to them, and you're just using it, unless you do your own solar power, you know, straight from knowledge books, information, and do it that way. So, but the solar power is great, but you do have to still understand how much you're using, how much you need. And that's what we're finding out now that we're in this RV. Now, it's a large RV. It has, you know, like 2 bedrooms, a bathroom. It's rather large. It's like a large apartment. And we kind of selected that as opposed to modular housing. And we didn't want something as big as a mobile home at this point, because right now it's just my husband and I, our grandchildren, if they come, you know, it would work out. You know, we just bunk a little bit, which is fine. They'd be underneath us. If we had a large house, they'd be all in the same room anyway, just because that's the way they would roll. So, you know, we downsized quite a bit. And that's a little bit of getting used to, you know, downsizing. You don't have those real big closets that got all that stuff. You only have what you need. You know, you have your little bit of what you want, but you're using really what you need. I would also suggest you kind of have to be aware of the weather. like we have boots, you know, whenever it's raining, I put the boots on. I don't like wet feet. You got to watch your health. You want to make sure things stay dry. So I have boots that are like right by the door. I have sneakers, you know, a hiking boot type of thing, an all-weather rain boot for when it's raining. I mean, it isn't nothing fashionable. It's rubber, rubber boots. And then, of course, you need the raincoats. You need all of that. And right now you can pick it up very, you know, cheaply, go to sales stores or Goodwills or Salvation Armies. You'd be surprised. Like for me, what I'm doing now is I'm collecting different size boots for grandchildren when they come, because it's going to be summertime, but you're going to want a boot every so often, especially if you have a lot of fire ants. You're not going to be walking around in flip-flops and sandals necessarily. You can, because it is a farm. I mean, you can, but just depending. If you don't want to be bothered with the insects and stuff, you put a more durable shoe on. So also, because we came from the Northeast and it was winter, we brought all of our winter gear with us, and I'm glad we did, you know, because it's much better to dress in layers. You know, we have a lot of layers on early in the morning. During the day, we take everything off. But if you don't have it accessible to you, that could be a problem. So between the water, you know, keeping up with, you know, every so often I fill a couple water jugs. We have a propane for our cooking, so we have to pay attention to that. You know, like for example, down in the south here, of course, we have really good sweet potatoes, and we had a harvest of sweet potatoes. Plus, they're very plentiful here. When I cook sweet potatoes, I pile my oven full of sweet potatoes. I might put 3 or 4 containers of sweet potatoes and bake them all at the same time. Then I put them in a refrigerator, and then I reheat them, you know, a day or two later. Instead of that mindful, oh, I'm going to eat one potato now, and you use the whole oven for one potato. For us, for me personally, now I conserve. I conserve that. You know, I don't, when I cook, I conserve when I'm cooking. I think about what I'm doing. If the electricity is on, I might use more electrical. I have some electrical, like crock pots and frying pans and things like that, because if the propane goes out and we don't have any more of that temporarily, then I'll use more electricity, and vice versa. If the generator, we're low on gasoline and we need to cook, I'll use the electric cooking utensils. So that's just something that you have to team up and think about.
Davis,
and I do. Yes.
Hey,
I'm sorry, is there a question?
This is the Rob out of Atlanta. As far as cooking goes, I saw this neat little thing that they do on YouTube. It's called a rocket stove. It's where they took a brick, the masonry bricks, but they're the center block bricks. And they had to cut one of them in half, and they kind of put it in the position. If you YouTube it, you'll see what I'm talking about. But that was a good way to burn biomass in order to get a sustaining amount of fire in a controlled kind of manner. So if you have time, you might want to check that out too. I don't know if you open to, like, you know, cooking outside.
Yes, brother. I'm glad you brought that up. I'm glad you brought that up, brother, because Richard, I guess you keep getting cut off. I guess you keep getting bumped off. But Richard, the brother had brought up a really good fact of YouTube video that does like a little oven that you use. What, like a cinder block, I guess? A cinder block is being used?
Yeah, it's called a rocket stove. It's where you can put the biomass at the bottom hole, and then it'll just flow through the top, and you can just have a constant flame, and it's very efficient.
And like I was saying, that's great that you pick up the YouTube videos now, because sometimes I'm doing the same thing. Even though we have these basic things that we have here, the propane and all of that, if there comes a time that we don't have any of that, you know, I would suggest you have that knowledge, because perhaps you can't use YouTube at that time if it's a grid situation or power's down, Wi-Fi's down, cell phone's down for whatever reason. You still, you got to have some of that knowledge, even if it's basic. And if you don't have, if you don't want to do a lot of YouTube videos, you can go around and collect books. You can go back and get Boy Scout manuals of first aid. You can pick up books about all kinds of handy, you know, things that you can do at home. But you got to have some type of knowledge somewhere. I think yesterday I'm sorry. Go ahead, Scotty.
This is Brother Davis. Let me add to the brother. Listen, every bit of knowledge is not applicable knowledge. You're going to need applicable knowledge. So don't get stuff that literally is just going to have you knowledgeable of it if you can't apply it in the circumstance. Why? Because it's no good to you. You see, we fail to realize that the best knowledge is the knowledge that we seek ourselves, because then we go out and find it, what it is we need in order to serve our purpose. One of the things I'm finding out, and believe me, brother, I do a lot of reading. My wife will attest to you are the fulcrum that makes this work, that makes everything work. And if I'm not doing the research for me, my wife is doing the research, because and what she's doing is going to also benefit me. So you want to work in tandem of what you're trying to do, because I'm going to tell you something. This is not, I don't want people to take this lightly, okay? To give you a little bit of just a tweak. You were talking about solar systems. I forgot to mention to you that there are monocrystallines and polycrystallines, and these are just different kinds of panels. The polycrystallines are a very good panel, but they don't work in low light. So what if you have a cloudy day? The monocrystallines cost you a little more, but they work in low light. So even if it's a cloudy day, you're still being able to generate energy. You see how a small nugget of value can add content to the process that you're trying to achieve. And that's why I said applicable knowledge is what really works to your advantage. Okay, Erica.
But like he was saying, different YouTube videos, when you have a little bit of time and you just want to research a little bit, what I was looking at yesterday was waterproof matches. They have a nice videos. I mean, matches are great as long as you can light them. And you might not have a lighter, you know. I mean, most of us kind of carry a little pocket lighter in our first cigarettes or whatever, but there might come a time you don't have that and you just might have a basic match. Then also you got to go into maybe starting a fire with a mirror, or, you know, there's just different ways of what you might need to do, but you should have some basic knowledge. One of the websites, one of the YouTube videos to make a match waterproof, they were using fingernail polish on the end of the where the fire is, where you strike it, and that makes it waterproof. I'm going to have to try that, though, but according to them, it worked. And, you know, just little things we'll play with, you know, when the grandkids come, we'll kind of, you know, play around, and you know, they might look at it as crafts and playing around, and we're taking notes, you know, because we're not saying all this destruction and all that's going to happen. If it happens, you're going to have to deal with it. If it doesn't happen, it, you know, people's way of life, just based on climate or based on finances, all might change, and you have to modify what you're doing. You know, you might not be living on a farm, you know, growing your food, but you might need to be conscious of maybe you want to do some freeze-fried foods or freeze dried, or you want to start canning, or, you know, just open your knowledge just in case these conveniences that we have nowadays no longer exist. One thing I do is I collect blankets and towels, you know, old towels. Sometimes I go to places, Goodwill or something, and they have a bunch of towels or old blankets or quilts. We collect sleeping bags, you know, we see them cheap, you know, we'll grab them. Because you never know when you're going to need those sources. And one of the worst things to be is cold and wet. That's very uncomfortable. And you will always say to yourself, why didn't I grab that blanket? Or why didn't I keep that old quilt? You know, we have animals. We have, you know, dogs and stuff. So sometimes we'll throw the old quilt in for them to lay on. It's just little things. once, please, Tando. He's Richard?
Yes, I'm back.
You keep getting kicked off. I don't know why.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, these are the circumstances that you live with out in the rural areas.
Yeah, I apologize, Tando listeners, but, you know, we just got kicked off and everything one more time. But I do just want to say that, you know, we're making our choice to live this way, and we like it. You know, I mean, it's working for us. You know, from time to time, we will go visit family in a regular city. I'll go, but, you know, we'll go back to Pennsylvania and that type of thing, and, you know, pick up a couple more conveniences. I know everything that I left that I needed, I said, why didn't I grab that? So I know I have a whole list for when I go back home, stuff I'm going to grab. Things I didn't think I might have needed, I see where it's stuff I can live without it, but it's stuff that I'd rather have. So it's working for us. We're looking forward to warmer days and really starting to do the seedlings for the harvest. One of the things I'm doing is collecting eggshells. When I use eggs, we are vegetarian, but we're not vegan, so we do eat eggs, we do eat cheese. So we do eat a lot of eggs, actually. And a farm up the road has a free-range chicken, so they keep us in a good supply of eggs. And what I've been doing is cracking the eggs so most of the eggshell is intact, and that's going to be my little individual seedling containers.
Sister Davis, we need to take our last break.
Our next part.
Black Talk Radio, your choice for digital black radio. New black media for the new millennium.
And welcome back to the Tando Radio Show on this wise Wednesday, January the 16th, 2019. If you have a question or a comment for Team Davis, give us a call at 704-802-5056. That's 704-802-5056. Hit ** on your keypad to unmute yourself and we'll bring you up. Sister Davis.
Yes, I was just making a couple of notes on a piece of paper, a couple of things I wanted to talk about. We do have some weaponry here. You know, it's good to understand gun safety, dealing with guns, dealing with bullets. You know, you need bullets to put in the gun. So if you see things like that on sale, you know, you might want to pick up and have, you know, just start planning a little ahead of time. We do have a little makeshift range here that we can practice from time to time. But there's also some silent weaponry that you might want to consider, such as bow and arrows, slingshots, mace, and knives. Mace is really good about fording off animals and other people. You know, it's a quick fix. You know, the mace that you can just spray in your eyes and give you some time to retreat, or usually they will retreat. And, of course, a slingshot, you know, might take some practice. There are old-fashioned slingshots, and they have a very new high, I don't want to say high-tech, but they do have a new more technical slingshots that you can get. But, of course, you need to take time to practice that. You know, it isn't just something that you're going to hit the bullseye first time you do it. And if you do it the first time, it might not be the second time. So those are little things you can play with. Bow and arrow, you know, that's something you could kind of play with. You know, you can maybe get a basic bow and arrow from Walmart or one of the hardware stores or you know, sporting stores, and you can kind of play around with that, you know, just so that you have some knowledge. You can see what equipment you might need, what you don't need. Of course, you don't necessarily have to go out and buy the most expensive equipment. Just kind of start at the basics. Even though we have some ponds here, if you don't really know how to fish or know what you need to fish with, unless you're going to jump in there and catch them, it has to be something that you have to think about. As a matter of fact, we do have quite a few fishing rods, and this weekend I was planning, supposed to be really nice this weekend, you know, just kind of getting all my hooks together, my sinkers together, just so I have that accessible kind of, thread up a bunch of, we got quite a few fishing rods, pre-thread them just so that they're handy. Because in a situation where it might be an emergency, sometimes it's difficult to find all the things that you need. Also, a good tool, a toolbox is always needed, with the basic hammers and screwdrivers and ratchets and pliers. Boy, did we understand that one for a couple of days.
We're not hearing anything. You cut out after you talked about, you said a couple of days. Are you still there, Team Davis? Okay, I'm not hearing anything. Sister Davis?
Apologize. He's trying to call. I apologize. He's trying to call in, but he's trying one more time. This will be the last time. Hold on. Richard?
Yes.
Richard, you're really in a bad area. You're really knocking off a lot. So
okay.
Next week, for the next show, if we're not on next week, it'll be the following week. Perhaps we need to tweak a little bit, see what he can do, where he's at. I do know that when we drive, I take notice to where we drop off calls just as we drive with our cell phones, because we'll drive down the road and won't have any reception, and then we'll go into another area that we do have reception. So that's just the way we have to live it here, which is fine. You know, okay. We'll make it.
Let me add that. I don't know if you heard me, but I actually have taken Erica out shooting this week. And the reason why I'm taking her out shooting this week is because literally she's not afraid of guns, but they're not her best friend. So I thought that we'll go out and drop 100 rounds so she could get used to, once again, comfortable with the weapon that she has. And believe me, yes, you're going to have weapons. So I don't want you to be a shock to anybody, by no means. But on the other hand, I want you to understand that when you make a decision, you want to be prepared, because once you put your provision, you need to have the, you need to be the security over your provisions. And the sad part about it is that we've reached a time now where that has to be given just as much as priority as food. So I wanted to add that real quick, Erica.
Go ahead, dear. Continue while you have good reception.
I was talking about tools.
I was also talking about the having tools. Sometimes you don't quite, in a city environment, sometimes you don't really quite pay attention to tools, because you might need a screwdriver every so often, and you might need pliers every so often. But down here, you need, we're always looking, you know, we always have our tools out handy. I have them kind of laid out kind of under a tarp, so that, especially when we first got here, because we were screwing things, putting things together, taking things apart. And, you know, one time we had to go to town to get this special something or other that we needed, which sometimes you have to have a special tool to do one thing, but without it, you pretty much can't do it. So we went all the way to town and we bought this special wrench that we needed, and it worked out. But believe me, that, you know, keep your things where you know where they're at, so that you can get access them easily. Because on a farm environment, you know, between tools and shovels and backhoe, you know, all that equipment is our standard of living. And it's just something that you need to, you know, keep and put up, make sure the elements don't get to them, that type of thing. So, like I said, it's a labor of love. It's not impossible, but everything we do, we think about. You know, we plan the weekend, we plan each day, what we're going to do. Once we're up and running with a lot of the vegetation, that needs a certain type of getting started, especially like I was mentioning about the eggshells. Instead of me buying those little, I mean, you can buy them, it's not a problem, those little mini, then you put the dirt in and then you put the seed in and it grows. I want to use eggshells. You know, you can use eggshells, put a little bit of dirt in there, put a seed in there, and it nutrients from the calcium of the egg, and it's kind of, you know, small little compartment. Then when your seedling grows big enough, you can put the whole unit right into the ground, and then the egg will disintegrate, and it has that extra calcium and protein that was in the eggshell. So I'll probably using that because we use quite a lot of eggs, and we give our animals, our dogs, eggs for protein. So I started doing that, and that's coming along. I have quite a few of those, and as soon as it gets a little bit warmer, we'll be starting that. I'm going to actually start doing some seedlings and keeping them here in the RV, and then put them outside. We have like a little greenhouse, and then after that, they're going to the ground. And we're taking pictures and everything. We haven't displayed a lot of the pictures yet, but we are taking pictures of everything as we're going along, you know, for a resource.
May I add, darling, that even in doing so, everything we do, we're trying to keep track of how we do it. Because this is our first time, we want to get the ultimate result. So we're things that we notice that are going wrong, we make a note of that so that we don't do that the next time. One of the things that I failed to realize was water on tools. As she was mentioning about tools earlier. Yes, down here, because the humid, the atmosphere, when it gets warm quick, it rust builds much quicker. Rust builds on metal equipment much quicker, so you got to have oil to grease them down so that at least they have some chance of survival, because if you don't, they rust up and you got another problem. And I'm going to tell you, it's simple when you begin to apply as you learn. And yeah, even the oils kick out. But I really don't need motor oil, vegetable oil. See, the things you don't know only come into play by that knowledge that you have. Believe me, you become very creative with a lot of different things. And I'm going to tell you something. My wife is an exceptional cook, but some of the dishes that she's coming up with now make me look forward to going home without a doubt. You know what I'm saying?
Oh yes, dear. But I do just want to add that you know, for any of the listeners, just play like a lights out game. Just play at home as if you don't have the resources that you normally have, and just see how you adapt. If you have children or grandchildren or young folks, you can have them play along. You can have them play along. You'd be surprised what silence does. The fact that there's no TV, there's no video games, there's no cell phones. Some people, it takes them a little bit to attack the silence. It's just things that, you know, that white noise that's always going on. A lot of people have a hard time adapting to just nice quietness. The fact that things are quiet, the fact that there's no TV, you know, some of the younger kids, I know in our grandkids, whenever they come and visit, they already know they don't have no video games. That's been forever. We haven't been video games in the house since 20 years, for as long as it's been, for a long time. We just don't do it. Now, if they do it outside the home, that's different, but we don't, it's not a, like, yeah, I love the house, but we just prefer not to be here, and we keep them busy doing other things.
And one of the things we keep them busy doing is we walk. Nature's a spectacular show, and sometimes we take a walk around the farm, sometimes we take a walk in the woods, or sometimes we just sit out at night and look at the grandeur of the majesty. But literally, there's a great peace in this decision that my wife and I both share. And if no one else gets anything from this, always remember this. When you get away from the city and you start making that a part of what you do, you're going to notice many things that you've not really noticed before. And if you live in the country, it's got to tell you, just going outside, sitting and listening to the night is a spectacular show. Because you'll hear things you wouldn't have heard before. Sometimes you got a flashlight, you see eyes. I'm talking about looking at you from a distance, because the light reflects off the eyes. They may not be coming to bother you, but you see them. My wife and I sit out, and we have the dog out there, and I mean, literally, a dog is good because they can deter any animals that may be, like she was talking about, there's coyotes out there, there's foxes, there's other pack animals. Well, a dog will bark, and they leave their scent. That deters a lot of them from coming in too close. Now, things like deer, you're going to see that wherever you go. You're going to see deer just come on into your property like they old friends. And some of them are, but you want to keep that sort of thing close, because that may become part of your food supply. And this is the grandeur of making a transition
that literally, if you haven't experienced it, can really transform you. I just wanted to add that, Erica.
I also just want to add, I know we're going to be wrapping up soon, I just want to add that, you know, in the meantime, if anybody on the call is thinking about moving outside the city, you don't have to move, you know, into the middle of nowhere, but just out the general circumference of the city to the suburbs, a little bit further than the suburbs, because once you get in the suburbs, you start seeing, you know, you have a little bit of land, you have a little bit of space, you know, you can try your hand at, you know, doing a little bit of planting. You can do just an herb garden, or you can just do something basic like tomato plants and cucumbers and collard greens. That's real basic. You know, they're all edible, of course, and they're pretty hardy, you know, and then you can get into more complicated stuff maybe the next season. Also, just try picking up some books on farming, some books on first aid, some holistic books that's telling you the different types of plants or different ways to make antibiotics or, you know, remedies, that type of thing. Because if the electric or something goes down and that's compromised, you're not going to have YouTube. You're not going to have those sources. But in the meantime, you might want to just print out information off of the internet. Just you know, different days, just print things out. It's also good to do print out maps. You know, we've all gotten real used to the GPS and that type of thing, but if there's a situation where that convenience is no longer available, you might have to have a map to get from point A to point B, or from one family's home to another. Then you also have to think about young people. You might know the way to go, but does that young person sitting in the back of the car know how to go from point A to point B? You'd be surprised. These kids have their heads down on a video game or a cell phone. They're not paying attention to location and how far it is to grandma's house, or what interstate to take, or what back road to take. These are things we need to start talking to our young people about so that they have a knowledge, because if we're not here, and we're all not going to live forever, our young people are going to have to sustain, and we're going to have to teach them, because obviously they're not teaching them in school. When I see what Core Math is doing, this new technology stuff that they're teaching the kids, they teach them how what one and one is two, but you go through 18 steps to get there. And some of our young children just need some basic knowledge and some basic understanding. And some parents are taking some of the basic things for granted. Some children don't understand, you know, fire is hot and how to cook, and maybe when food doesn't smell right, don't eat it. You know, if something doesn't smell right, don't drink it. You know, we need to teach some of our children some of the basics, because we might have to depend on them. We might be laid up in the bed, and they might be the one that's foraging for food. And we just need to bring our young folk along and just show them what we're doing, and just demand that for this weekend, or a weekend in particular, that you're not going to do a lot of technical things. We're going to sit down. We're going to talk. We're going to look at things.
They want to participate. Plus, they really want to participate. But listen, before we go, Erica, let's give them a little bit of upbeat stuff. The neighbors down here, y'all, they really down-to-earth people.
Yeah,
these neighbors, that I'm telling you, they're the type of people that want to help you if they can. They're definitely going to keep you in tune with what's going on, where the local story is, who that stuff is too, where they want to get it, who that all package stuff. I mean, one of the things about a local community, when you move into it, they want to grow. And the more diversity, some people are more receptive than others, let me be very clear. But the more diversity, they welcome it. And I'm going to tell you, we have been received very well. What would you say, Ms. Davis?
Yes, we have. We really have been received very well. The neighbors here are very nice. A lot of them don't lock their doors. They're very, I don't want to say country, but, you know, they're very low-key. They're very comfortable in their surroundings. I don't quite see as many farms and growing vegetables as I would think would be down here. I just don't see a lot of people who have gotten into just not really farming anymore. A lot of people do have gardens, but if you have land to to me, you should have something growing. I don't know. That's just what I would think. Because in a city, you're limited. So you would love to have a big backyard or a big front yard. But I don't quite see as much farming and just gardens. Not necessarily farming, but gardens as I would think. You know, unless they're hidden. But I just don't see them driving or going to folks' home. I mean, I'm a little surprised by that, that I don't see that. But other than that, you know, a lot of them, they have free-range chickens. There's a lady up the road who has cows, and it's just been after the deer hunting season, so a lot of them are giving a lot of deer meat away. There evidently was a big harvest of deer, and so they're giving, once you get one or two deer, the rest of them, you just kind of give the meat away. So some of them have given us meat. Now, we're not meat eaters, but, you know, I'll dabble with a little bit of their deer meat, you know, make a stew or something. I just don't like the manufactured meat that's in the grocery stores. But, you know, wild game is wild game, and that might be something in the future that we might have to deal with. So, you know, kind of get an understanding of it. Because in the future, you might be eating things that you're not used to, beans and different types of sprouts and different kind of berries. And, you know, so while we have the chance now, we can all dabble and learn and kind of play around with it and share what we're doing, share the understanding, share what you don't like. You know, some people don't like to squat. And you know what? I'm not on a toilet. Oh, you know, life can't go on if you don't have a flushing toilet. Well, you know, things might get rough and you don't have that. So kind of play around with that. You know, just play around for the inconveniences that make you uncomfortable, because usually once you understand what's making you uncomfortable, you just kind of flip it and dip it, and then it's more usable. It's more understandable. But there's a lot of people who's dealt with floods and a lot of bad weather that had to do a way of life that they weren't used to. You know, don't think that everybody... Go ahead. I'm sorry, honey.
I also wanted to add that, listen, there's highs and lows and everything. And we enjoy the highs, and we go and work through the lows. And I really want to take this out, because I'm going to sign off here. I want to take this opportunity to let you know, we have taken pictures, we're taking video, we're going to start expanding out in reference to showing these things so that people have some idea of what we're talking about when we're talking about it. And we encourage you, contact us if you can, if you'd like to, set up a way that we could let us know that we could help you. Because ultimately, we're doing this here because we want to maintain a quality of life generations to come. And whoever we can help, we want to be a part of that process. Okay, my darling, I'll see you a little later. Thank you, Tando Radio, for allowing me to come in, and I'll leave you to my wife.
Yes, and I just want to add, too, that I know Pastor Keith is on the line, or at least he was on the line. For people who are faith-based and you might need to print out a couple of scriptures or affirmations, to, you know, just in case your normal cell phone or what you normally have that has that printed is no longer available. I also suggest that right now we store a lot of our photos of loved ones in our phones because that's a convenience that we have. You might want to go and print some of those, because in the future, if you don't have that convenience of a cell phone or a computer, and you still want to visibly see and share the photos of those loved ones, that means you have to print them out. And we've kind of gotten away from printing photos and things like that. So, and also, you know, whatever your faith is or whatever you believe in, kind of have those kind of scriptures and affirmations around you visibly, because like I said, what you normally have them on, a type of electronic media, might not be available or might be temporarily interrupted. So those kind of things you just have taken for granted, because I know I did. You know, I know that's something that I took for granted. And like I said, all day, different times of day, we don't have electric running. Generally, my cell phone is running all the time, but I have ran out of power, and I do have those little small backup battery. You know, you plug them in, and then you can plug them to your cell phone. I have a few of those, so you know, you just have to be a little bit more conscious about everything you're doing. But you know, we're here. We're glad to be back on the Tando Show. A shout out to Dave, that is, I guess, taking some time off with family and friends. And a shout out to him. And of course, Scotty, without you, there would be no us. So we do appreciate you taking the time and keeping us, you know, keeping the Tando family and BTR on the air. And we do appreciate everything you do. So I'm going to give you the last few minutes. If you have a couple of things you want to say, I'll give you time to do that. If Tando, if we are not on next week, we will be on the following week. We're going to see what we can do about getting him in a more stable environment on Wednesday. So if we're not on next Wednesday, please look for us the following Wednesday. We're signing out, and peace and blessings.
All right. Thank you, Team Davis. Keith, did you have anything before we sign out?
Well, I just wanted to say that I enjoyed the show. Hopefully you'll be back next week, but if not, we understand, but we thank you for all of that.
All right. Well, we want to thank you all for tuning in today to Tando Radio Show. Remember, continue to support Black Talk Media Project, North Carolina-based nonprofit, which created and manages Black Talk Radio Network and the BTR community. Peace and blessings to all. Y'all be safe out there.
Gold dinar would have had serious consequences for the world financial system, but may also have empowered the people of Africa, something black activists say the US wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing cake. We're slicing cake.